Fed can just print more money out of thin air, but the government's always going to be in debt to the Fed. Oh.
Folks, you guys are gonna love this episode, but really quick, I did want to give you a heads up. This is about a 3.5 hour long one. You get 2 hours or so of free content and then 1.5 hours behind the paywall, okay? So usually you're getting like 30 minutes or so. Since this one was so long, I wanted to, you know, make it worth it for the people that support the show financially, which I can't thank you enough. Hey, if you can't afford the $3, not going to hold it against you, okay? If you can't do that, spread the love. Tell your family about the show, your friends, your pets, your fish, your lizards, whatever. We need listens over here, okay? Those things are ticking up, and I like seeing that thing grow, okay? You can also leave 5-star reviews. That's a great way, awesome way to help the show. But, yeah, we made this one definitely worth it for the Patreon subscribers, man. So thanks a lot to you folks first and foremost. And wild stuff here. Shannon from the Secret Squirrel Podcast hops on. He does the entire episode with me. And then Paranoid American jumps on, I don't know, maybe 1 hour or so into the show. And he stays for the remainder. So, you know, he's always bringing fire. Shannon's always bringing fire. I try to bring fire. Usually I bring the water on accident and put the fires out. But, you know, this was a great one. I think that you're really going to enjoy it and hopefully learn a thing or two about the spiritual foundation of the United Nations. You heard me right. There's this weird esoteric society that actually has serious pull over the United Nations, the one world religion, and of course, the New World Order. Okay. Enjoy this episode. Tell your friends about it. Join that Patreon, patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. I'm going to shut up. Let's just roll right into this episode, guys. Enjoy it. Ladies and gentlemen, we have something pretty interesting to talk about here today. Brought on Shannon from the podcast that should be starting up any day now. I'm excited to get this thing, get this out to you guys, man, because not only is Shannon always sending me some interesting information, he's a good dude, you know, and I'm not trying to talk about him like he's not here. He's listening in on this. He knows what I'm saying. Shannon, what's going on with you, dude?
Nothing, man. How you doing? Good to be back. I like being on and kicking it with you, man.
Yeah, me too, dude. We talk pretty much every day, too. You know, you kind of just reached out, and then you've been really sending me some great information, the most recent of which being the Lucius Trust, sometimes referred to as the Lucas Trust or Lucy's Trust. And this is some interesting stuff, dude. I had heard Alex Jones mention it a long time ago, didn't put any thought into it. But now that we're starting to see some of these things manifest in the world, and seems like this new world religion is starting to get a little stronger, I think that it bears some discussion here at the very least.
Oh, yeah, I agree, man. It's definitely something you don't hear a lot of people talk about. Most people probably aren't even aware that these people exist. And then you find out they branch out into so many other organizations and different groups. And so many of these big players are involved with them, and you don't really hear too much about them. So we're still learning ourselves about them. I mean, so as we go along, we'll learn from each other, and hopefully everyone out there will learn something too.
Yeah. It might be something that we revisit. And I think definitely on my Patreon, one of the rants, we're going to discuss Alice Bailey a little more. She's of course the founder of the Luciferian Trust, which changed its name for political reasons, obviously. And this is the spiritual foundation for the United Nations. So this is no crackpot thing. It might sound like they're throwing around some wild ideas to you out there, especially if you're more Christian or Jewish or Islamic, one of these Abrahamic religions, or the religions of the West as a whole. But there's definitely some merit to the things that they talk about. And mostly just because, and I would say the reason that I say that is because you see a lot of global leaders that are very, very involved in this stuff. So we're going to talk about Alice Bailey, her husband Foster a little bit, the Lucius Trust or the Lucy's Trust, and how it became that from the Lucifer Trust. This is based a little bit off of the Theosophical Society and Madame Blavatsky's work. And the only reason that I say a little bit is because they did kind of have some fighting within that whole Theosophical Society. So Alice Bailey splinters off and creates her own thing. And then we'll talk about just the weird beliefs that they have. There's a 10-part plan that will usher in the New World Order, according to Alice Bailey and some of her work. And then this will get us into Dr. Robert Mueller, not the Robert Mueller that most of you guys are probably thinking of that was involved with the Trump scandal and all that stuff. This is an entirely different dude. And then we'll talk about the three individual organizations underneath the Lucius organization or the Lucius Trust, the Arcane School, Triangles, and World Goodwill. We'll probably touch on quite a few other things here, but plug your stuff real quick, Shannon, before we get rolling into the episode here. I know that you're about to start that secret squirrel up.
Yeah. It should be coming on. What is today? Today is Wednesday. Should be coming on real soon here. I already got a few episodes recorded. It's just a matter of editing them and then throwing them on there, and we should be good to go. You can get a hold of me at secretsquirrelpodcast@gmail.com.
Sweet. And this will hopefully be on your feed as well, because you're obviously contributing a lot to this episode. You sent me a lot of links. And then I did my thing. I started researching it and found some wild stuff, dude. So, of course, you can find me at Dangerous World Podcast. Patreon.com/Dangerous World Podcast is my favorite website right now, just because they're really helping me out, man. I appreciate that whole platform. It's pretty badass. You can straight up just stream the episodes. The app is dope. And you can plug in that RSS feed and get all your good stuff the same way that you're listening to me right now, whether it's iTunes, Google, I think Spotify as well. You just plug that RSS feed in and you're ready to listen the exact same way. So I appreciate that. It's actually how I met Shannon here. So this is going to be fun. But where do you want to start, man? I was thinking, you know, kind of talking a little bit about where the United Nations enters into this whole New World Order plan. And, you know, they're part of one of six groups that, you know, this packet that you kind of sent over to me here lists as crucial New World Order organizations.
Yeah, we can start with wherever you want, man. Touch on whatever you want. Before I think we get into Bailey, we should hit on the society that they came out of, for sure.
Sweet. Okay. And I should add, too, before we really roll into the episode, we are going to have the Paranoid American join later. And this guy's always got some really interesting information to talk about. Dude's very, very knowledgeable. He's got that awesome comic book company and, coloring books, all kinds of cool shit they're putting out. So when he hops in, he'll plug his stuff and then he'll share some of his knowledge on it, because he's got a unique knowledge base on this. So, you know, we'll be all over the place here with this, but it's definitely some cool shit. So I guess let's get into it, man. We got these six groups. You've heard of most of them. The one that I had not heard of was the Gorbachev Foundation, but you do have the United Nations, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, the Gorbachev Foundation, which again, only one I hadn't heard of. And then of course the Club of Rome. And these six foundations are, like I said, really critical to promoting the New World Order and this one world government, one world religion. The financial system's all going to get tied together, and they have seven goals, according to this information, too. They want to merge God with nature. This is what they call ecology. They want to instill eugenics, which it seems like they're on their way to doing that. Eradicate male and female distinction, or make everyone androgynous, essentially. Again, I see that happening everywhere around me. The fourth goal here is world peace and nuclear disarmament, which I know that, like, you know, the apocalypse clock. I just did a freaking episode on them a while ago. Doomsday clock. That's big with them too. You have the fifth goal being one world economic financial system. Six is one world government. And seven is the one world religion. And that's really where we get this Theosophical Society and the Lucas Trust. What do you think so far, dude? Do you see like the goals here being met for the New World Order?
I don't know, man. When I came across it, I was like, man, number one, check. Number two, mm-hmm. check. All the way down. I mean, I don't know. It seems like they pretty much got them all in place.
Yeah, the one world government is going to be one of the later ones. And then the financial system, it seems like they're working on that now, dude, with the diminishing of the dollar. That's the base currency of the entire world, the petrodollar. And we're moving away from that. You know what I mean? I think crypto is going to enter in here with that. And yeah, dude, it's seems like they're well on their way for sure.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think whatever their plans are, it looks like according to their 10-point plan, they got it pretty well established.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. And yeah, once we go through that 10-point plan here towards the end, there's some great little themes to it too, man. Like this packet that you sent, it lists what the goal is, and then it lists what Bailey said about why the goal is so important. So it's real cool. I don't know. Maybe we can alternate going through that, or if Thomas is still on here during that, we can kind of all just talk about that. It's wild. But like we were saying before, we wanted to roll into the Lucas Trust, or what do you call it, by the way? Do you call it Lucas, Lucius, Lucy's? What do you call it?
I always say Lucis.
Lucis. Okay. Lucis.
But I have no idea. I mean, I'm a Southerner guy, so who knows how you say it, man. Evil.
Yeah, definitely evil. I mean, yeah, Lucis would make sense because it's Lucifer. I do think it is probably either that or Lucy's. But I've heard like English people, they refer to it as Lucius. But yeah, so we'll just go with, I mean, if we say any of those terms, you know what we're talking about here. But before we really get into that, I wanted to touch on this Theosophical Society a little bit and just Madame Blavatsky. She's a weird chick, dude. Have you seen pictures of this lady?
Yeah, I've seen her. Yeah, she is definitely strange looking, right?
Yeah, creepy. Really weird, man. Doesn't smile, and it's like, you know, that the old school pictures where no one smiles, but she definitely has like a witch kind of vibe to her. But
yeah, creepy vibe
for sure, dude. And jump in here at any point, because I'm gonna be reading off some notes here that I took. Most of this is sourced off of their website directly. It's just theosophical.org. And then I did a little bit of digging on some of these things because they do such a good job of making their organization seem like they're good and pure and they're trying to better humanity. But once you dig a little deeper, you can see that the opposite seems to be true. Now, what it is, it's Helena Petrovna Blavatsky was a Russian noblewoman who actually became the first ever Russian woman made a U.S. citizen, which I thought was insane. Referred to commonly as simply Madame Blavatsky, she traveled the world as a young woman searching for ancient wisdom and the reason why humans are here on Earth. So they took a lot of this old esoteric religion, the ancient mysteries and the mystery schools, and they made them more commonly researched among elites and like scholars and people that were actually kind of going out searching for this information. And this society started in 1875 in New York and mixes Eastern religion with Western and the more new religions. And according to their site, which is, again, theosophical.org, they have these three core principles. And I thought that was kind of interesting, too, because like these, you know, businesses and organizations often have three core principles, five core principles listed on their site, and they want that known to everybody. So these three principles are this. You got one, to form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, caste, or color. Two, to encourage the comparative study of religion, philosophy, and science. Three, to investigate unexplained laws of nature and the powers latent in humanity. These powers latent in humanity, meaning like powers that we haven't really understood that we have yet as the masses. You know what I mean? Now this dude, there was a couple people involved with starting it other than just Blavatsky. You have Colonel Henry S. Olcott, and this dude was a trip to look into a little bit too. He's the first president of the society. He was a Civil War vet on the northern side. He was also a lawyer, a journalist, and a Buddhist. And then you may have also guessed he was a Freemason for sure as well. And this is what I thought was crazy, is that he was actually on the commission in charge of the investigation of the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln. So this dude was a high roller, man. It's kind of wild to think that this guy that has his fingers in government and politics is like, even back then in the, you know, 1800s, was, you know, involved in this Theosophical Society at the highest levels. He's the first president, connected very, very deeply with Blavatsky.
Makes you wonder, right, how far back this stuff all goes. It's like, my gosh, man, they had a down pat back then, you know?
Yeah, well, and you'd think, like, and I'm sure that you know this too, is like, it's got to have been easier to keep these things secret back then. You know what I mean? There's no internet. No one really cared about this. It was just day-to-day life shit that people were concerned about.
Right, right. So, I mean, and they still did a good job of even concealing it, and just the writings, even the writings themselves, you know, they're like masters of manipulation of the word.
Yeah, definitely, dude. I mean, you know, it's kind of weird to think too, that these guys started the wave of spiritualism. And I have a big problem with spiritualism, the way that people describe it. I understand that spiritualism can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. But when people start talking about spiritualism, a lot of the people that are involved in conspiracies and then think that it has everything to do with spirituality are being misled through groups like this. Like all these free thinkers that kind of think the same, they kind of mindlessly follow, unknowingly, they follow this Madame Blavatsky and this Theosophical Society.
Yeah, they've managed to infiltrate, it looks like, a lot of stuff, like, you know, disguising it as something else.
Well, and that's probably what's made it so difficult for a lot of people to understand, is that the amount of misinformation back then in the 1800s was probably kept to a minimum, because, again, no one really went out looking for this stuff. But now you have more, you know, younger people, less educated people like myself, right? I didn't go to college. I have a high school education. I barely passed that. But now I have the internet at my hands and I can look into this stuff myself and come to my own conclusions and actually learn a lot of shit that a lot of people back, like, you know, 20, 30 years ago even, weren't able to access just because of the internet. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword here. But yeah, dude, like I said, they do a good job of showing that they have these pure intentions, and they also kind of take God out of the picture and put their own God in. It's weird. They don't seem to honor the God that we would think of, not just you or me, but, you know, the average person thinks God is, you know, universally good. But these guys seem to think that God has two parts to him, one good, one bad. They're both opposite but equal. It's a lot of that stuff that I was talking about in that Freemason episode. So I don't know, dude. You seem like you're Christian in this whole thing. You don't consider yourself like agnostic or anything?
I don't know. You know, I'll be honest. What I do is I read the Bible, New Testament, and I just try to follow what Jesus did, because I'm a big follower and believer in him. So that's really what I try to do. I think a lot of the other stuff was misinterpreted or jacked up, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then you show me that symbol too. And they take, anytime you see Christ, it means cross. And they've hijacked that big time, dude. And they will make that cross mean like Lucifer and things like that too. So you see that in here. There's a lot. This is kind of an extension of that Freemason two-parter that I did, because they overlap so much, the Theosophical people and the Freemasons as a whole. But yeah, this idea of removing God out of the picture while somehow making claims that they're channeling some godlike figure is a reoccurring theme within Theosophy. And we'll play this clip here in a little bit. It's some audio. It's almost 4 minutes. It's longer than any kind of clips that I usually like to play on here, but it's so freaking crucial to this. And it's so wild that we're looking into this stuff, Shannon. And like, it happens to be that the Lucius Trust holiday is yesterday. It's 6/14, June 14th. And we're in the middle of looking at this stuff already. And then it just happens to pop up that, yeah, this is their big holiday, when they all say a prayer to try and invoke what sounds like the Antichrist to me.
Right. And then when I was looking that up too, June 14th was also the full moon, because that ties into, they believe, the strawberry moon, I believe they called it. I had it written down somewhere here. And they believe that when you meditate and pray on it, that it could, they can suck your energy pretty much.
Dude, there's a lot of people that believe that doing yoga outside during a full moon, kind of exercising to the moon, almost praying to the moon, doing stuff like that, what is like a positive thing. But it seems like, again, dude, they disguise this so well that some great people, some very, very good people that are not Luciferian, or sometimes they're even atheist or agnostic like myself, will go out there and they'll participate in these satanic rituals, dude. And it's really, really well done on their part. But it's so evil to trick people like this, man, because these are very intelligent people.
Right. And then the more, I don't know what your conclusion was, but it seems like they were really tied into this energy and exchange of energy and trying to get energy, and money is energy, and this is energy, and all kinds of, everything goes back to the energy. It's real weird.
Well, dude, I have this quote here where it says money is the manifestation of energy, right? And if we take that satanic principle that they like to do so much, and we inverse that, and we say energy is the manifestation of money, well, 80% of money that is in circulation right now has been printed in the last 2 years since COVID started. So by that logic, they're printing energy out right now, and they're expelling energy. And you can feel, like, since COVID started, and it's really kind of exponentially gone up in the last couple of months even, people are drained, dude. Like, no one cares. Everyone's very apathetic right now. Even my bosses at my work don't seem to really care that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, morale. They've done a good job, I think, of getting people's morale to sink, man. A lot of people's morale's in the gutter.
That's what it is, dude. The morale is low. And I mean, just think about that. If we're operating right now with 80% less energy, you know, because 80% of the money has been printed in the last couple of years, that would make sense. You know, we don't have the energy to do, to care about, you know, normal things, man. Like, I don't know. I haven't been doing yard work lately. I don't really care about any of this shit. And I mean, it's not like I love doing yard work in the first place, but it seems like a lot of pride has kind of gone down, and like the good pride, not like, you know, the bad pride where it's like, you know, this bad thing. But I don't know, dude, you see it constantly that just the energy and the energy is low and the apathy is high. No one cares about shit right now. So I don't know. It's all about fighting, it seems.
Yeah. Right. But that's, I think, what they want. You know what I mean? They want that. They want to push that narrative and divide us however they can.
Yeah, man, they're definitely doing that very well. But yeah, so that was a little on the Theosophical Society, their kind of core principles, their main methods and how they operate. And again, this was the inspiration to Alice Bailey, her husband Foster. I think she was married three times, I want to say, definitely twice, potentially three times, so I didn't mark that down here. But Foster was also really high up in the organization. I'll kind of go through Alice Bailey's history a little bit, some of her personal stuff. And it's wild, dude. She had some hallucinations, and it sounds like she had a rough childhood and whatnot, which it seems like a lot of these people that drift into this darkness seems to be a reoccurring theme, right? You seem to definitely have rough childhood, and you can go one of two ways with a bad childhood. You can be a great person or a complete dirtbag, depending on how your brain works.
Right. And it seems like it's funny how these people are always put in positions of authority or some position of power, you know?
Well, I think that has something to do too with the propaganda that Disney promotes, man. I mean, in all these Disney movies, the parents are either gone or they're stupid or it's a broken home. I just watched Rescuers Down Under the other day, and that's a phenomenal freaking movie, dude. I just watched it because I kind of want to go back when I'm bored and watch these Disney kid movies from an adult perspective and see what I can pick up on, because they are great storylines and the animation's kind of nostalgic and it's kind of fun to go back and look at. Dude, the symbolism in that is insane. It's wild. And so you just see this where the families are broken, and then, you know, these people that come from these broken homes go on to do great things in these Disney movies.
Yeah, but every dad is always a real dumbass too.
Oh yeah,
you know,
or they're out of the picture
big,
you know,
time. Yeah, yeah. Usually they can't even make a cake.
Which one? What movie are you referring to right there?
Dude, whatever. It don't matter. My kid used to watch some of that, so I'd watch it with her when she was a little, man. And I forget the name of the exact show, but the guy couldn't do anything, man. The wife would do it all. She was a superhero, you know?
That's so funny. Dude, my favorite symbolism within Disney is Geppetto from freaking Pinocchio, because it just straight up says pedo. He's got pedophile in his name, Geppetto. You know what I mean? He's fucking.
And then there's Peter Pan too.
Well, yeah, that's a reference to Pan, the god right. of mischief, right? So yeah, dude, yeah, it's endless. Yeah. It's absolutely endless in there. But anyway, back to Alice Bailey here and her kind of the way that she got to where she was with the Lucius Trust. She was an unhappy child, and it led her to attempt suicide. But at the age of 15, this mysterious stranger wearing a turban walked into her room and sat beside her and stated that she would have to prepare herself for an important mission. And so for many years, she believed that this visitor was Jesus Christ. But later she saw a picture on the wall of the Theosophical Society when she got introduced to that, which she knew to be this stranger. And this guy was Coote Humi, which actually, if you look at pictures of him, he looks exactly like the portrayals of Jesus with the sun symbolism behind him. It literally just looks like Jesus with a turban on. Now, what he is, he's one of these Mahatmas, one of these kind of enlightened ones, or these chosen people that is very kind of godly. And again, claimed to have communicated with Blavatsky back when she was doing her thing and started the Theosophical Society. So I think this was a hallucination. A lot of people, or maybe she was just straight up making it up, but followers of her say, like, no, this was real. She, you know, this Coote Humi manifested and, you know, presented himself to her so that she could go on to do these quote unquote great things and basically start this wave of Luciferianism. What are your thoughts on that, dude? Weird.
Yes, that real weird. And then that ties into the Theosophists with the White Brotherhood. They're the Great White Brotherhood and the Ascended Masters. That's what they believe he was. And I believe that's what caused the fallout, right? Because they didn't think that she was channeling who they said she was, so she broke off.
Well, so the fallout comes later with another one of these figures. And
right.
That's funny that you actually remember that, because like if I wasn't going off notes here, dude, I wouldn't remember that, because she was supposedly visited by two separate Mahatma type figures, these chosen ones, like almost Christ-like figures, and in their mind, absolutely Christ-like. But yeah, later after she goes through this, so like I said, what I think was either just complete bullshit, maybe some trauma-induced hallucinations or something, because if she's trying to kill herself, especially back then at age 15, things must have been pretty rough, right? I mean, this is kind of a common thing now, unfortunately, but back before technology was around and all these weird like radio signals messing with our heads, suicide didn't really seem like a common thing back then, especially for kids that really shouldn't be under any stress in the first place. But yeah, man, she goes on to get introduced to Theosophy by some of her friends after she had a failed marriage with this Episcopalian preacher. And that's another reoccurring thing with a lot of these people. They have some bad experience with like mostly Christianity, right? I don't know. It seems like something like that happened with Blavatsky as well, where they get very turned off by people hiding behind Christianity. So she joins the society. Alice Bailey, that is, joins Theosophy, joins the society and moves to the headquarters in Crotona, which is the Theosophy headquarters in Hollywood, back in 1917, where she edited the society's periodical, this little magazine called The Messenger, and became friendly with Foster Bailey, who ended up being her husband, and he was the national secretary of the society at that time. And so this is when shit gets wild, in my opinion here. In November 1919, now remember that 1919, two 19s, while walking in the hills there in California at this headquarters in Hollywood, basically, Bailey was contacted by another spiritual master named the Jules Cool. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. There's a few different pronunciations, but the Jules Cool, DJUAL/KHUL. And this guy is another Christ-like figure. He's known as the Tibetan. And he requested her to be his eminensis, I think is how you say this. Basically someone that would collab with him either artistically or writing wise. And they were supposed to work together, and these books were going to be dictated telepathically to her, kind of like the Mormon story, kind of like a lot of these stories where religions start. She was supposed to get this message in her head and write these books down, this ancient knowledge. And yeah, dude, they go on to do 19 books together, supposedly. Okay. So 19 being, again, very, very repeated here, and such a important number when it comes to like the alpha and the omega symbolism, God symbolism. You have COVID-19, you had 19 hijackers, 19 kids died in this Uvalde thing. A lot of these rituals have the number 19 in them for some reason. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really tied into numerology and really tied into just the way they can use words where the common people will think there's something mean one word, but it means something totally opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. It's interesting to look into for sure. But this first book that they wrote was titled Initiation, Human and Solar. So there's a lot of interesting stuff with that too. You get like a solar initiation, human initiation, and I would imagine the molding of the melding of those two, the mixing of them. Solar, of course, kind of represented by like shining and glowing and glimmering. That's a reference to Lucifer, I would say, the way that they see it. The sun god, all that good shit is tied in with that solar stuff. And they started this in 1920. And then over the next 30 years, 18 more books were made, again, producing 19 books, all telepathically dictated to her by this Tibetan, this the Jules Kuhl. That's wild shit too, man. So if she's telling the truth, if she's not just full of shit here, she's straight up seeing two of these people, right? Now, I don't know, dude. I think it's complete bullshit.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I have no idea, man. It's like, the more you look into all this stuff, it's like, is it real? Is it not real? I have no idea, because they're liars themselves. So you don't know if they're even telling the truth.
So do you think that it is possible that she was actually visited by these things that, like, you know, Christianity would view, not only the Tibetan here, but they would view this, what was the first guy's name? Kuhl or Kutumi? They would view
maybe as like demons, and say maybe it's the same thing coming in, representing itself as something differently. Really, it's the same entity.
Well, yeah, the Luciferian Bible, right, that has 77 names for the devil. Now, I don't know if Jules Kuhl or freaking Kutumi would be one of those 77, but it sure seems like some sort of demon. Again, looking at it from a Christian perspective, some sort of demon would be telling her, hey, we're going to tell you what stories to write. And not only that, dude, but this goes on to be so influential with the United Nations and this one world religion that absolutely has some Antichrist symbolism within that. So, I mean, those would be demons, dude, if she actually was seeing these. I just kind of have the feeling that she was just lying just to try and start her own movement.
I have no idea, but the Theological Society, I can't even say their name, they all believe it.
Yeah, dude, they definitely go back and forth with this weird stuff, but it is interesting that you start seeing, you know, with her loyalty, she gets kind of upset with the philosophy and the religious aspect that got her turned on to this whole thing in general. And yeah, dude, that kind of takes you back to like that Kutumi thing where the Kutumi, I got his initials mixed up. That, you know, she wasn't into theosophy until her friends introduced her to it. So she could have kind of gone back and said that these things happened, even though they didn't, just to try and reiterate that, yeah, you know, there is some spiritual force behind me and they're telling me, hey, I'm destined to do great things, and we're, you know, we're going to work on this shit, and we're going to change the world here. Uniting the world under one religion sounds like a good thing in theory, until you know that this is kind of like the goal. Goes back to the Tower of Babel, right? Where everyone in the world works together to try and do something. I'm not sure exactly what, but it's clearly seeming to be against
the Christian God's will. So that's one thing that is definitely a big turnoff with that.
And all these people always have huge egos. And it seems like that whatever the entity is always feeding into their egos, that they're so special and, hey, you're chosen for this. And really, it's the same message. And it just gets repeated over and over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. So anyway, back to the notes here. After these books are starting to get created, after the first one specifically, this is when she starts the Lucifer Trust. Again, and back in 1920. And it was initially created to be a publishing house for this kind of work, along with some of the esoteric works of Blavatsky, because she did absolutely respect her work, just had some bickering about the smaller details. And I think that she kind of had a big head on her because she was saying that she was chosen by these deities and, you know, wanted to go on and do her own thing. But yeah, later on, this Lucius Trust becomes an umbrella company for the Arcane School, Triangles organization as well, and then World Goodwill, which, like I said, we'll get into here later, hopefully when Paranoid American hops on here. But what they also do, which is very, very interesting under the Lucius Trust, is they publish and disseminate UN propaganda. So anything that the UN wants printed out or typed out or published in one way or another, the Lucius Trust will be involved in that. So they're going from these ancient mystery schools to working with the biggest global organization, I would say, you know, right next to the World Economic Forum, probably a little bigger than them still. I don't know, man. That's insane to me to think that this was esoteric and now it's so mainstream in 2022.
Yeah, it's like, and these people became major players, you know, it's out of nowhere, really. I just wonder how much her husband was pulling the strings behind for a lot of things, because he seems like he was a major player.
Go ahead.
No, that's what I was going to say. Seems like, and then he's tied into the UN, and it's like, holy cow, these people are all connected. And it starts getting so weird.
Yeah, I was looking at him a little bit. There's not much on him. Like when you go and you look, I mean, not from a glance, but when you look at, you know, there's when I'm my tabs here, there's so many different tabs open of like theosophy and Freemasonry and just how much those two esoteric schools of thought intermingle. I mean, Freemasonry has taken a lot from theosophy. But yeah, so you got, where is it? Alice Bailey. If you type in Alice and Foster Bailey, you don't get much about Foster off the bat. You kind of have to dig a little bit. There's this site called Theosophy Wiki. And yeah, it just basically says Foster Bailey was an American publisher and writer who established the Lucius Trust, the Arcane School, and the Beacon Magazine, which is their mouthpiece. It doesn't say anything about Triangles or World Goodwill, which we will definitely get into again later in the episode. Nothing too significant about his early life, just according to this simple site. But
I think he took over the school, right? When she died. I think he took it over.
I don't know. I think he died in 77. I don't know when she right. died.
I had it all down. I think it was like, I want to say, I'm not really sure. Actually, I shouldn't say.
If you want to look it up on your phone or something while I'm going here, you can, because I'm pretty sure he died in 77 and then she dies, I think, afterwards, but I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, they lived for quite a while, man, it seemed like. And you know, again, Blavatsky was around before she died, I believe, in 1891, I want to say. And yeah, man, just the same, you know, thing just gets kind of carried on. It seems like she's carrying the torch for Blavatsky here. Did you find anything?
Yeah, Alice Bailey, she died in 1949.
Okay, so she died before him then. Interesting.
Yeah, and I think he took over the Lucius Trust, and then after he passed away, I think it was their daughter that took it over.
Yeah, Mary Bailey.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so they just kept it in the family. But yeah, so she died first, and then he. So it's just weird. You can't find nothing out there. So if anyone else can find anything on this dude, send it in.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking around for a little bit. I felt like it was more important to kind of look into Yeah, it's so funny, dude. You type in Foster Bailey death on Google and it pulls up fucking Alice Bailey's death. You know what I mean? It's not like an easy thing. I just remember seeing 77 with
Yeah, because you asked me if I heard about him. I'm like, man, I didn't really research him because I couldn't really find anything on him too much. And he was a big player, so you think there would be at least some stuff to find on him.
Yeah. Well, we'll say 77 unless someone else can you know, hopefully correct me if I am wrong. But anyway, so yeah, you're right. He lives on longer than her. And then they pass this to Mary Bailey, who, I, from what I understand, still runs the Lucius Trust today. So she's the one that's real tied in with the UN and helping perpetuate the UN propaganda. But yeah, so anyway, Alice, and one thing that too that I want to point out before we kind of get back into the story here, they make it seem when you look at the Lucius Trust website and like information on Alice Bailey, you see, like, I thought that this dude that she was talking to, the Tibetan, was a real person, like a flesh and bone person, because they refer to him as that. And it's not even clear in my head right now if he was real or not. Like, it totally seems like he was a spirit or some hallucination, because like you go and you look him up, there's no picture of him. There's a picture of that this Coot Humi guy, again, looking like Jesus. But there's no picture on like Wikipedia or any of these like mainstream sources of that Jules Cool dude, right? So really freaking weird, man. And I even have in my notes when she was working with this guy, who was a spirit again. That's when she started having these disagreements with the Theosophical Society over, again, tiny details. And she could have just worked with them if she wanted to, but got this ego on her. And then starts getting this this world religion cooking under her own set of rules, mixing this old ancient Eastern religion, Hinduism, Buddhism, all this, you know, more esoteric stuff, and mixing it with Western and more modern religions. And then she starts this arcane school where they practice full moon meditation, like we talked about. And then they have the Great Invocation. And this is all pushing towards this goal. Now, again, I'm going to play this little clip, and it is pretty long, but I don't know if you heard this, Shannon. Did you listen to the little prayer clip?
I started to listen to some of the invocation, but I didn't want to invoke anything, so I turned it off.
Yeah, and so to be clear, we're not going to play the prayer. Just because, like, if anyone, because I would get sketched out of that too. Like, if I was a listener, I'd be like, dude, I don't want to hear this prayer. So we're not playing the prayer. We're playing a description of what the prayer is. But go
prayer
ahead.
Prayer is right. Yeah. And what's interesting too is the Great Invocation was translated into 50 languages, and it's the New Age mantra. It has been used by the UN at conferences and during the opening ceremonies in 1992 at the UN's Earth Summit in Rio. So I thought that was pretty weird.
Yeah,
so that was back in 92. They were already out using this stuff out in the open.
Yeah, man. When I start playing this, let me know. Oh man, that's creepy. Where we won't play it there. It just happened where I was going to play it. It was going to be 6 minutes and 66 seconds long. That's freaky. So we'll skip forward a little bit. But yeah, we got, so check this out. And let me know what you think when we're done. And notice the terms that they use, the energy of the person that's speaking this. It sounds kind of like an AI bot, but they use this real soothing tone, it seems.
It sounds just like NLP, neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah, definitely, dude. It's freaking weird. So here we go. Just give me a thumbs up if you can hear it.
Millions of people hope for a future world in which goodwill flourishes, and the well-being and right relations between people, nature, and the earth is paramount. We dream of a world that is whole, that integrates the vision of human rights and earth stewardship with the principles of sharing, so that together we can create a better world of peace and justice for all. large numbers today find their meaning and purpose in helping create such a world. Through the determination, creativity, and concern of so many groups and individuals, we are moving towards a more enlightened future. But something else is needed too. In order to build the world we long for, we need to draw on our higher capacities of will, of love, and of lighted intelligence. People of goodwill and good heart can pull their spiritual resources and come together in focused prayer and attention to invoke the energies of the soul of humanity, those divine potencies that lie in the higher reaches of our nature. The Great Invocation is a world prayer that concentrates the natural call constantly arising from people of all cultures for light and love and the will to do that which is good and right. Its beauty and strength lies in its simple expression of a number of universal truths. The truth of the existence of a basic intelligence to whom we vaguely give the name of God. The truth that behind all outer seeming, the motivating power of the universe is love. The truth that throughout history and in all faiths, great individualities have come to earth and embodied that love so we could understand. And the truth that both love and intelligence are effects of the will of God. It is the will and plan of God for humanity to constantly evolve and develop in its ability to express love. We are approaching a time when we can expect another great individual to come to lead us forward on this path. Hence the call in the Great Invocation. May the coming one return to Earth. Every year since 1952, large numbers of people have used the Great Invocation on World Invocation Day. Please include the Great Invocation as part of your regular prayers and meditations on this day, knowing that as you do so, you are linking with countless others from around the globe who are united in a concentrated act of invocation.
I believe this is where the beginning of the prayer starts.
The Great Invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth.
Shannon, thoughts?
Man, that is some creepy stuff, right?
Isn't it? Because when they refer to light, too, they're talking about Lucifer.
So Lucifer, right?
Enter into you. They're talking about that. That's what invocation is. But yeah, sorry. That's so crazy.
Yeah. And you think how many people that they think and they disguise it as it's so loving and it's so good and come join us, give us your will. And really they're just using you for whatever they're using you for. I don't know. Giving your will over to the darkness, I guess. It's just creepy. It's like how many that just invocation, the word, if people know what that means, that's just creepy in itself to me.
Well, and they sit there and say this entity that we vaguely call God, this thing that we vaguely call God, as if like calling something God that is God, right? Calling the creator of the world God, or the creator of humanity or creator of everything, we vaguely call it God. That's kind of like an insult, I would say, right? It's like it's just this vague name. It doesn't really mean anything.
It seems like it's made to offend some people, you know, like they're trying to intentionally do that.
Well, yeah. And the line of that whole thing is may the coming one return. That's a pretty damning little statement right there, dude.
Well, you think about everything and then, you know, as conspiracy theorists, you look at all this different stuff, and it's like, man, CERN and all this other stuff. It's like, man, maybe these guys are just, they're so, it seemed like they're so prevalent in like the New Age community throughout. Their teachings are spread in so much different stuff.
All right. We got the paranoid American that was waiting in the wings here. Just got him involved to talk about some of this Lucius Trust stuff. It's a wild topic, man. We've gotten into a lot of stuff. First of all, dude, really honored to have you on. I'm really a fan of your work, man. Plug your stuff right up front here, because I want people to buy those coloring books and the comic books.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Likewise, too, man. So you can find me at paranoidamerican.com is the main website. And then all the newest stuff is on Amazon, coloring books, comic books. I'm branching out into some games that you'll find on Steam, maybe by the end of the year, next year. And then right now I've got a comic book called The Chosen One that's about conspiracy podcasters. And it's just going around, and you're going to have cameos from all the usual, you know, crew that you're going to see in it. It's essentially about a conspiracy podcaster that finds a big secret society. So that's one of the cool new projects that I've been working on that I'll plug.
Dude, yeah, I saw you sent that out, and it's freaking awesome, man. It's a good idea. And Shannon, if you hadn't seen the stuff that he does, check out his site, man, because it talks like MK Ultra comic books and, like, you know, just hidden knowledge kind of stuff, that like the stuff that we're into, but it's like a fun thing. And then did you ever get around to doing that chemtrail kids book, or was that like
an older project? Yeah, that's actually on Amazon right now. It's called Connect the Dots is the series name, and the title of that book is The Confounding Conspiracy of Chemtrails. And the second one's in the works now, and it's the Secret Society Job Fair. And it's like a children's book that teaches you about like the Cult of Mithra, the Freemasons, the Scottish Rite, Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. It gets into like 5 percenters. I try to cover like every kind of cool secret society or unknown group out there, and written as like a children's book. So yeah, I love that series. It's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, it's badass. You said he kind of emulated it after Magic School Bus, right?
Yeah. So instead of them going into like an actual school bus, they've got like if you've seen those old prepper shows, a lot of those dudes would bury school buses underground in their backyards as these like big labyrinths. So essentially in this school, they've got like this labyrinth of underground school buses that lead into like an astral projection layer, sort of MK Ultra, Project Monarch and shit.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, no, it's you're an interesting dude, man. And so I thought that it was kind of cool to be able to talk with you about this Lucius Trust stuff. How did you hear about them, if you don't mind me asking? It's an esoteric topic. Not a lot of people know about them.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this one came up a while ago when I was talking with my buddy Juan, and he brought it up as, oh, dude, there's this like Luciferian, room inside of the United Nations building at 666. Manhattan Ave, and like, and at the surface, I was like, that sounds kind of like bullshit. So I started looking into it, and I think the 666 address might have been bullshit. I think at one point it might have been like 706 or something like that. But the actual people that set it up, and I think you already got into like the Baileys and their whole backstory, but it really was named originally after Lucifer Publishing Company, and they also established this Lucius Trust. So like just the fact that it really was indeed named after Lucifer, it perked my ears up. So I kind of dug in deeper, and that was my first initial interest into this. And that was earlier this year.
Well, yeah, dude. And so from what I understand, it was actually on 666 United Nations Boulevard, but they changed it now to 866. And that's similar to that phone number that you sent me, which is 1-866. And then I forget, you know, where it goes on from that, but it's letters after that.
Well, it stands for New York Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, but the N-Y Lucis is a six. So it's 866-N, which is 666 in a row. And that's one of those things where I try to not look like super deep into gematria and numerology and like linking Greek and English words together. But I also have this kind of rule of how many coincidences will I allow before I start getting, you know, conspiratorial, and I start getting suspicious. And it was like the 666 address. And then even though I know 866 is a very common toll-free pre-number, just the fact that it's like, okay, here's another number 666. And if you look, they fully admit that the Lucis was more or less based on the name Lucifer right there on the website, and all of Bailey's work. So you've got these multiple references to 666, multiple references to Lucifer. I'm like right at that cusp of like, there's enough, enough coincidences here to make me interested as a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, dude. And just the fact that they're so involved with the United Nations, which, I mean, there's this on American Dad, there's this great scene. And I was telling Shannon about it, like off air, where it's an apocalypse episode and they're looking for the Antichrist, and the Antichrist lives in the United Nations building in this cartoon that's on TV for everyone to freaking see. You know what I mean? And it goes back to that one world government, the one world religion, the one world currency, and all this stuff where it's all about one. It's kind of like a new Tower of Babel, so to speak. So you see that symbolism in there. And the fact that, like, you know, not even 100 years ago, this stuff is very, very esoteric and no one really cares about it. And now it is the most influential spiritual organization in the world, but most people still haven't heard about it, dude. It's mind blowing.
Well, I would step in and say that the Lucis Trust and the Baileys were probably not as well known back then, but the stuff they were interested in and all of this like theosophy and you know, Blavatsky's research, that was actually kind of in vogue for a lot of specifically like upper class people. Like if you had enough money that you didn't have to worry about putting food on the table and like dealing with sickness, then you had the luxury of like philosophy and esoteric and Eastern and Western religions and stuff. It was almost like a hallmark of being somewhat affluential in order to even be interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, it's just a trip to me to think about this. And yeah, Blavatsky's work was huge. But, you know, like I said, I don't think a lot of like the middle class and lower class knew about this stuff, and they still don't today, dude. You can go around, you can talk to all kinds of people. They probably haven't heard of her. You know, it's more of the educated people, it seems, or people that are, you know, crazy and into this stuff.
Well, like anyone that's listened to any kind of like rock music from 60s and beyond, especially heavy metal, there's undoubtedly influence there that came from like Black Sabbath and the Beatles, and then the Beatles and Black Sabbath and a lot of ancillary bands get inspiration from Crowley and mention him in the works. And there wouldn't be the same influence of Crowley without Blavatsky's work. So there's this like thread that ties everything together, even if you're completely ignorant to all of those like occult origins of a lot of this stuff. And the whole like the shock everything, shock comedy, shock performances, you know, shock artwork, you could almost trace a lot of that kind of back to this like Crowley sort of like completely hedonistic lifestyle of like, let me just do what thou wilt. And like he wasn't like the one that invented, you know, acting crazy and being a spectacle. Yeah. But he kind of made it mainstream, and he was the one that like popularized it. So other people say, oh man, I can do what Crowley's doing and get all this attention.
Mm. Yeah, man. It's a trip. And so Blavatsky influences Bailey and Crowley at the same time, right? Cause Crowley was around same time Bailey was.
Yeah. And Bailey, I think was sort of known as like an American version of Blavatsky, and just didn't get a whole lot of the credit. But I mean, they were all sort of regurgitating the same information and translations. I think Blavatsky was influential just because she actually helped translate a whole bunch of source materials that hadn't yet been translated into like the Western world yet. And then everyone else that kind of came from there, you could mention Bailey is one of them. You've got Albert Pike, which also kind of like derives some of that. You've got Elphys Levi that sort of also translated these arcane works into modern languages that people know.
And then he drew Baphomet, right? He's the one that created Baphomet.
He's the one that created the one that everyone kind of like refers to. Yeah.
Manly P. Hall too. He's tied in for a lot of people.
Yeah. A lot of people like almost criticize Manly P. Hall as just regurgitating what Albert Pike and Blavatsky wrote, and people criticize Pike and Blavatsky for regurgitating what other people wrote. So it's just like this long line of vomiting downwards. But
yeah, it's like a big orgy. It was like a big group orgy. They were all just sharing their ideas and using each other's stuff.
And it's kind of funny too, because they got a lot of criticism for doing that. But modern day, it's like, if you look at those very first translations, they're a chore to read through. It's not easy. It's like, they're not even organized that well. Like there's chapters, but there's no kind of structure the same way that you'd expect the book in 2022 to have some structure and like some, you know, page turning kind of like interest to it. So every time someone like regurgitates it, whether it's Blavatsky or Pike or Manly P. Hall or modern day guys, every time it's just like written for a more modern audience. So the point I'm making is I don't look down at anyone regurgitating this stuff. It's great to like keep updating it to get more people interested.
Well, and what's kind of interesting too that we talked about just briefly was that Blavatsky was the first Russian woman to be made a U.S. citizen. You know what I mean?
I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. That's kind of crazy.
There's some weird coincidences with the whole Theosophical Society, because the guy, the first president of the whole society, which his name is slipping my mind right now. I've got it in my notes here. Colonel Henry S. Olcott was also appointed to the investigation team of Abraham Lincoln's death. So, you know, you've got these people that are at the highest levels of society in one way or another, because you don't just get to be the first Russian woman that's made a U.S. citizen,
right?
Unless there's some reason there. And same with the first president being, you know, appointed to something that was very, very important to the American people at that time, right? Still kind of is one of the great conspiracy theories out there, is who killed Abraham Lincoln, who killed JFK, why was it done, in which way, obviously, right? But yeah, dude, you said that you had some interesting things on Bailey's childhood, some more like kind of hidden information. We just glossed over it. I figured since you had the information, if you wanted to share it, dude, like what else?
Yeah,
you
got, I mean, so my mind almost always goes to the classic, like, follow the money. So my first thought is, okay, like, aside from the Baileys and everything, I'm gonna make some assumptions that they grew up wealthy, both her and her husband Foster Bailey, to even kind of have these interests, just because it's very, very rare for someone to just be in abject poverty their entire lives and also be interested in Theosophy. And then the second thing that I kind of looked into was how much money did it take to like set this thing up in the UN in a reading room and then like a modern day institution that still outlives them. That's a large pool of money that keeps that kind of thing going.
Yeah.
Or it's a lot of buy-in from third parties. So it was interesting, because if you go right to the Wikipedia page, which is like usually everyone's entry, the article for Alice Bailey, it doesn't really give a great background. It makes it almost sound like she grew up poor and she kind of grew up as like this fundamentalist. But the truth is that she grew up in like very upper class Victorian English society. She was kind of like, her one skill was, I think, making like lace work or something. Like, that kind of shows you the level of work that like her and her like siblings were kind of at. And they were, you know, they were way beyond any sort of like working class. But I think her parents both died when she was really young, and she got handed off to fundamentalist family members. And this was kind of like a huge change for her, especially this fundamentalist aspect, because it kind of turned her into this missionary of just like preaching the word and trying to convert people into Christianity, essentially. But again, she's like still very rich, and she gets sent to India and with a bunch of British soldiers. And I think her experiencing and meeting British soldiers that actually, you know, lived in abject poverty, it kind of like opened her mind, like, oh, there's a whole other world outside of this Victorian upper class that I was brought up in. And then through this, she ended up having like a husband. She followed the husband to the United States. You probably covered some of this. He was abusive to her, so he started beating on her.
The Episcopalian preacher, right?
Episcopalian preacher. And it was this weird dynamic, because she still loved him enough and realized that because he was an Episcopalian preacher, if she came out and said that, you know, he was beating her, or if she divorced him, it would ruin his career as an Episcopalian preacher. Mm-hmm. So she kind of like stuck with him to avoid like ruining his entire life. But he, at one point, he threw her down the stairs. And I was listening to a podcast by the Lucis Trust people, like the current founders. And they mentioned that when she was growing up younger, even though she was, you know, super high class, rich class and everything, she had no real worries. She had committed attempted a suicide like three different times. And one of those suicide attempts, one of them was funny. I don't mean to say funny in a suicide attempt, but one of them was
fine.
She threw herself down the stairs. Another time she tried to drown herself. And then the third one was she tried to bury herself in sand.
Ooh, so that's a bad way to go.
It is a bad way to go, but I don't know. I feel like it would be very hard. Like, I don't know. Once both of your arms are under, how do you get the sand on top of your face? So like, What order do you do it in? Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so she gets thrown down the stairs by this abusive husband, and that was like the final straw. And at this point, though, she had followed this American to America, and now she's, you know, she's completely in a foreign land because all of her family's back in England living it up, and they're fundamentalist. And now she's kind of like this new agey lady living in Southern California, and her one skill is lacework. And she's looking around at these, like, you know, 49ers and they're, you know, next generation, and no one's looking for lace work. They're looking for, you know, railroad workers and all sorts of other, you know, like manual labor stuff. So she ends up, I think, working at like a sardine factory, and she actually becomes like the best sardine packer in the entire plant. And she kind of uses this as a reference of like motivation of, she came from like the highest highs and fell all the way down to the lowest lows in a completely lost land, surrounded by strangers. And while she was at that lowest low, she realized that like all of the quote unquote, like poor people in the lower class that she was around now in California, they were actually helping her and being nice to her. And they like, they lifted her up and they elevated her, and she was able to survive and thrive just because of this community of, you know, bumpkins essentially around her. And she realized like, man, I lived my entire life in high society and no one gave a shit. You know, when I was in a bad mood or if I needed help, like that was it, because everyone just assumes like, oh, well, we've got everything, so you don't need anything from me. But when she got down to that different type of society, it just like blew her mind open. And I think at this point she started learning a little bit more about theosophy and different cultures and religions. In addition to her time in India, she's getting this from immigrants that are in California for all different parts of the world. So this was like this one little spark in this crux of it. But I thought it was really interesting, like the suicide attempt, the being triggered by, you know, her husband beating her and pushing her down the stairs, which was the same way she tried to commit suicide, and then abandoning him over that and kind of like rebirthing into this American culture.
When you're talking about these three times that she tried to commit suicide, were those all while she was married to this guy or just throughout her life?
No, this was when she was a younger kid before she even moved out of England.
Okay, because yeah, this was when she was visited by this Kuthumi or Kuthumi, depending on how you pronounce it. This is the guy that says to her, hey, you know, you can't do this to yourself because you have an important mission here on this earth, and it's to create this one world religion, essentially. And so she goes on, joins the Theosophical Society, but then splinters away because she has these little disagreements because of this second prophet type figure that comes to her, known as the Tibetan. And, you know,
who's a real guy, apparently. He's supposed to be a real dude in Tibet. He's not an ascended master. He's not like a ghost or some interdimensional being. He's an actual guy in Tibet that just happens to develop this telekinetic bond with her, and they can just like speak, or he basically like dictates to her.
So did you see that? Because that's one thing that I was just talking about with Shannon earlier, is that I couldn't see if he was a real dude or not, because there's no picture of him. Even on Wikipedia, where there's always at least.
Oh, I mean, I don't know if there's actually proof that it was actually a real guy, but I mean, according to Alice Bailey, who said that it wasn't, because the general concept of her flavor of theosophy was that there are ascended masters, or whatever you want to call them,
these hierarchy. People
that have like the hierarchy, they've elevated beyond human consciousness. But B, they're still here. They look over us and they kind of like get a little bit of say, or at least get to watch how things are unfolding. And then that three, sort of like the elements of karma and reincarnation, are what gets normal people into that same state.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like her little flavor of it, I believe. And saying that, the reason I'm even mentioning that is because she did not put that Tibetan dude as an ascended master. He was just some other dude on planet Earth alive at the same time as her, and they were talking with each other, you know, like they were on a Zoom call essentially. But
yeah,
I don't think there's a whole lot more detail about like who that specific dude was.
And that's what's very interesting to me, is they make him seem like a real person, but you know, they just happen to cross paths while she's walking around in the Hollywood base, basically, of of Theosophy, right? Which they relocated to a separate city in California later. But
it's interesting that how closely Hollywood and these sort of like secret, you know,
cool
esoteric societies seem to just go hand in hand.
Yeah, it was called Kratona.
How close to it? It's almost like Kundalini too. If you look into Kundalini, it's like with the chakras and everything, it's like mimicking that, almost the same thing. They just change the language and she uses planets and a lot of stuff.
you could almost apply it to like the geography of that whole Southern right. California region, right?
Yeah, it's very weird.
Well, one of the many things I thought was really interesting was, you know, this Gnostic idea, this doctrine, basically, which, you know, to your point of her kind of separate idea of what theology means, transforming God, right, into something which I think emulates Satan a little bit more to the way that at least Christians would look at it, while bringing kind of Christ, Jesus Christ, down in that hierarchy of like these, yeah, he ascended and his consciousness was higher than most, but he's lower on that hierarchy. And this hierarchy was meant to become externalized. And then this is when the new world order would be ushered in, this one world religion, when the atheists and the spiritual and the religious people all have to abandon their ideas because this one figure comes down. This would move us out of the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius or the age of Maitreya, which, you know, Shannon and I were going to talk about a little bit. And this is the guy that, you know, supposedly the future Buddha, the fifth and final Buddha of our times. So that was an interesting thing. It seems like they're very, very fascinated with Eastern religion and the old world stuff, Hinduism, Buddhism, all that.
Well, their whole thing was combining Western religion and Eastern religion into one world religion. I mean, it was literally that was the plan. It was very blatant. It wasn't like a secret plan. That was like the number one stated goal of their version of theosophy, was to blend all world religions into one religion, almost like this grand unification theory of, you know, like the string theory, but the religious version of that.
Yeah. Did you have anything else on Maitreya, Shannon, that you wanted to touch on, or did you want to move on?
It's just weird how they all, the theosophists and the UN, they all talk about that, the Lord Maitreya, and how he's supposed to be coming. But I believe that if you read now, they think he's already here, supposedly somewhere waiting. I don't know
where. Elon Musk, dude. It's Elon Musk.
Is that Maitreya?
Creepy.
I don't know, dude. Who knows? Creepy, man. Freaking May Musk knows? Is such a weirdo. Well, you know, the name alone too is real interesting. And then I want to get into these 10, the 10 point plan that they got, and you know, jump in with anything that you got to, either one of you guys, honestly, because the Lucius name, Lucis, that means light. Lucy means light, right? And you can either have like Lux or Luce or Lucy, and it's light in Italian or Latin, also Romanian and Roman. And it can mean shine, shimmer, sparkle, or glisten. And that brought me to find this Roman goddess of light that's called Lucina, and her full name is Juno Lucina, and she's not only got the goddess of light, but also of the moon too, and of birth. So she's kind of considered like the champion of women, the queen of heaven, and that brings you into that whole idea of God being a woman, which is supposedly blasphemous according to Christians. I don't know, dude. I see such an attack on mainstream Christianity that's kind of what draws me to it. I say it on my show all the time. I'm agnostic, but I lean towards Christianity because of the modern day persecution of it, dude. I don't know where you sit on the religious spectrum.
I started very agnostic and then turned into like, I feel like I understand Christ consciousness more than talking snakes and, you know, like flying ghosts and stuff and, you know, big floods. But I absolutely have come around to the concept that there's people that probably have a much higher consciousness than other people, for sure.
So do you, and I don't mean to pry, and you can just tell me to go fuck myself if you don't want to talk about any of this. Do you see any religion making more sense to you, or any kind of like group or anything like that making more sense?
Not really. There's a couple just like little quotes here and there that have always kind of like fucked with my head forever and ever. And the one biggest one that kind of changed me from agnostic to, you know, maybe some like other third category that I haven't found yet, but it was in the Upanishads, and this dude's having a conversation with Shiva. And at one point he's very logical, right? Like everything's math and science and logic. And he's presented with this logical paradox of, you know, if everything's logical and everything has to make sense, then why is there something rather than nothing? Because just an absolute state of nothing would make a lot more logical sense than something happening, like, you know, life and just matter and time and energy. Like, why does it even exist versus nothing at all, because it's almost like if pure chaos were to just allow itself to find its logical conclusion, like the extreme conclusion, then it just dissipates into nothing. And there's just a big vacuum of vast nothingness. Right. But that's not what we have. So just that alone is enough to be like, there's something out there, and, you know, it's not just all nothing. And that might've just been like a steering away from nihilism more so than agnosticism. Yeah. But I think that was kind of like a crucial moment of like, there's more to it than just, I can't know, because I mean, I don't think I'll ever know. So maybe that's the agnostic part.
Yeah, that's why I feel, I mean, I feel like what you were kind of describing seemed to be like, not with the, what was the text that you're referring to?
I think it was the Upanishads or it was the Bhagavad Gita. It was one of those two books.
Okay. So yeah, it seemed like that would, like the description would be more atheist in the way that, like, you know, like not the agnostic part to me, but maybe I'm misunderstanding you.
I guess maybe it was more of a transition from atheism to agnosticism to maybe, I don't know if I would say Gnosticism, but because agnosticism is that like Christ consciousness or God or religion is this thing that is, it would be like a human trying to explain himself to an ant. That's the best analogy I've heard for agnosticism. Is like, even if God's out there, it's just like an ant can look up at you, but if you try to explain yourself like, I'm a human dude and you're an ant, and like here's the rules of physics and stuff, it just wouldn't work, because the ant is almost agnostic of humans. So maybe there's some kind of level of like, we would be agnostic to something bigger than us, like if we were the ant and that was the big thing.
That's fascinating. And I've heard allusions or, you know, kind of some idea of that, I think on Joe Rogan's show, actually, where he's like, when you wave your hand over a bug, the bug doesn't even really notice that you're there. You know, maybe it will get scared and move because there's a shadow or some wind going over it. But the bug doesn't really, like an ant, like you said, it doesn't pay attention. It doesn't care if you're going to swipe at it or kill it. It just is doing its own thing until you do step on it, and then it's just dead. So, yeah, it's a weird, it's freaking weird what we live in, man. I think about it a lot, but I try not to, dude, because it,
well, I love that analogy the most too, because enough ants could kill a god, you know, or they could kill a human essentially. So I always wonder, could enough humans kill a god in the same way?
That's some crazy ass fucking thought too, dude. Like, yeah, I don't know, man. It, like I said, it can drive you crazy. And that is why I do kind of respect the work that goes on with not only these guys, but, you know, the Freemasons, the Templars, all these different groups throughout time that widely do get a bad reputation, but, and maybe rightfully so, I don't really know for sure, but, you know, there's definitely, I think, two sides to that. I wanted to move into this, this little 10 part thing here. And, like I said, either one of you just jump in with anything that you got, anything that you want to talk about here, because this 10 pointer is wild. And I'll share my screen so you guys can at least see what we're reading here. Shannon actually sent me this, and this is some good shit. Where did you find this, by the way, Shannon? Just stumbling upon it?
Yeah, I start going down so many rabbit holes and grabbing PDFs and different stuff, and it's like all of a sudden you just hit something. It's like, man, this is weird. I'll mark this and come back later.
Well, yeah, and so this is where Robert Mueller will come in, Dr. Robert Mueller. I'm sure he would not like to just be called, because that's why they go to school like that long, right? They don't want to be called Mr. But this guy, along with some other folks, came up with this 10-point plan, it seems, of the New World Order. And it's freaking interesting, man, based off of the Lucius Society and what they get into.
This first one's already triggering the hell out of me.
Why?
Because this rings so true to some of the other research that I've been doing. Completely different tangent, but I recently got into understanding more about the Trivium and Quadrivium. Are you guys familiar with the seven liberal arts?
So
these were skills that were pretty much part of every classical education up until, you could argue, when they started taking prayer out of schools in the US, this was still kind of the standard. And if you look at a lot of Christian homeschooling materials, they still very much follow the classic Trivium Quadrivium education process, which has been completely abandoned in the same way that public education has gotten rid of prayer in schools. And it's weird to me, because I don't personally believe there's a correlation between Christianity and religion and the Trivium Quadrivium. It just happens to be that they were always so closely linked for such a long time through Jesuit education and through just like classic Roman education that it was hard to separate the two, but you know, the UN ended up doing it. But the trivium is essentially, it starts with understanding language. So it, I can't remember the exact order, but it's like, first you understand grammar, then you understand logic, and then you understand rhetoric. And essentially grammar is understanding the input. Like, what do words mean? What does the order of the words mean? If you can't break down the grammar of a statement, then you can't even process it. The second one is logic, is where you're like, okay, does that statement make sense? Are there any obvious contradictions? There are any obvious assumptions being made? That would be the logic step. And then rhetoric is like, okay, who's saying this and how are they saying it and in what context are they saying it? Because maybe there's like an alternate agenda for why they're saying certain things in certain ways. So that's kind of like that classic trivium. And that lets you, it's like, that's your instant bullshit meter. You know, it's like gives everyone a bullshit detector in their head for anything they come across, written, spoken, anything. So just removing that from the education system means that everyone doesn't have that bullshit detector that people have had for thousands of years up until, you know, recent modern history.
So that's the trivium. It's grammar, language, and then basically propaganda.
Grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And no, I wouldn't say rhetoric is propaganda in some ways, but it's the same way that like, you know how to effectively communicate and you know not to just kind of ramble on and you know how to like bring things to a point. A really good example I've heard recently on like these language experts, they were doing like Johnny Depp trial and stuff. But there was a great example where if you have a list of three things where I'm trying to tell you to come to a party and I'm like, oh, man, you know, Jay-Z was there. And the food was really good and the parking was really easy. It sounds weird because you usually build up to the biggest thing. You'd be like, oh man, the parking was easy, the food was great, and freaking Jay-Z was there. You know what I mean? Like, but just that subtle nuance of the order of things that I mentioned those in, that's part of rhetoric. And if you don't understand rhetoric, you kind of sound like a weirdo out of context and your communication's not as effective. Some people are so freaking great at rhetoric that they can convince you of bullshit just because they're so good at placing words together and like building up the tempo and stuff. And then there's other people that suck so bad at rhetoric that even though they're correct, they'll just never get a word in edgewise. Yeah.
And then it like the point that they're trying to make falls on deaf ears for sure. So to be clear, I mean, and obviously we alluded to it here, the first point, and I think the number one goal of the UN to make this one world religion, this new world order, is to take God and prayer out of the education system. Now, do you feel, to be clear, that, and both of you, I'd like to get both your opinions on this. Do you think that God and prayer should be involved in the education system? Let's just say here in the United States, because it was obviously Christianity that was heavily promoted in the United States schooling system. Go ahead, Shane.
I just think you should be able to do what you want. That's what I think. Wherever you want to practice, practice.
Should it be part of the curriculum, though? Because I think that's kind of what it was, right? According to what Paranoid was saying here.
I guess as far as moral-wise, I mean, that could be okay in certain aspects. You know, that just have the good morals rather than no morals.
Okay.
That's what I'd say.
I kind of think that if they were to cover it, it would be in like more of a historical aspect, not a moral aspect. And just to be clear, too, I don't think that the trivium and quadrivium and Christianity are even linked together other than just the fact that they had always kind of lived side by side for so long that it was hard to get one without the other. But the side effect here of taking God and prayer out of schools, it also removed the trivium and quadrivium from schools. And that same,
gotcha.
It would have been great if they could have just taken like maybe the religious fundamentalist teaching and left the trivium quadrivium curriculum in there. But that's not what happened. It like the whole freaking thing changed, the whole pattern, everything. Because also back when God and prayer were at the heart of the education system, it was community-based schools. And, you know, like the community would get together and send all their kids of all different ages to the one schoolhouse. And they would all kind of like learn the same things together. It wasn't even split up into first grade, second grade, all the way up.
Interesting.
So it was just a completely different approach to education as a whole. So like, this is such an overloaded statement because by taking God and prayer out of the education system, you're really saying completely redesign how communities come together and teach their children and replace it with this standardized, public, nationalized version of it, which is way bigger than what that statement makes it sound like.
Right, I mean, almost like a common core, right, that we had to go.
Exactly, bro. Yeah, imagine if like like this is one of those like the bills they pass where it's like the simplest little thing. It's like, oh, this is the bill to take God and prayer out of the education system. And then you get into the details and it's like, and implement Common Core and implement this and implement this. That's kind of what this thing is right here. This first bullet point.
Okay. Okay. Well, so she goes on, Alice Bailey goes on to say, and why this is such an important thing. She says, change curriculum to ensure that children are freed from the bondage of Christian culture. So that's why I brought up the Christian part. Now, why would you do this? Because children go to school to be equipped to face life. They're willing to trust and they are willing to value what is being given to them. If you take God of education, they will unconsciously form a resolve that God is not necessary to face life. They will focus on those things the school counts them worthy to be passed on, and they will look at God as an additional.
You said as an additional, but it's kind of fucked up because she says if one can afford the additional, and my mind goes right back to like, here's this rich British, you know, aristocracy lady, yeah, being like, oh, I don't think those poor people can afford to understand God right now. Like they need to make sure they can understand the basics first. Not like me, like I'm elevated, but I can handle God. They can't really handle it. Something about that is just so rich to me.
Well, yeah, it's a snobby ass statement. And what's interesting here is that it notes that today they introduced transcendental meditation into kids, which brings them into alternate states of consciousness. And this is a new age ideology, right? Instead of prayer, it's transcendental meditation. So
well, I know for a fact when I was in middle school or high school, we did like a stream of consciousness writing, which you could almost say is like right there next to like auto writing, where you summon, you know, you summon a demon and you just, your hands moving and you just write whatever, yeah, words and letters come out. I mean, that was just a regular transcendental writing process in my high school. And that was in the late 90s.
I mean, dude, I was in school in the 90s too, man. We're probably about the same age. And yeah, there was free writing and all that kind of stuff, which it does seem very low key, kind of introducing you to that idea there. Now, if that first one triggers you, I wonder how this one leaves you both feeling. Reduce parental authority over the children. Now, I know Shannon's got a kid. I don't know if you do.
No, I don't.
I do not. But she says break the communication between parent and child so that parents do not pass on their Christian traditions to their children. Liberate children from the bondage of their parental traditions. That's wild.
The school knows better than mommy and daddy, which is something that's like pervasive right now in education.
Yeah, dude. And I mean, let's say Christianity is what is targeted here, in my opinion. There's not many Hindus that are in this country, especially back then when this stuff was being written. To be clear, this was written back in 2017-2018 in the academic year there. But yeah, you have, just tying back to Christianity, and I hate to sound preachy or anything, because again, I don't know what the hell's going on, but it notes here in the packet that Jesus said in the last days, wickedness will increase. So there's going to be like rebellion. The children will not obey their parents and so on. I think you see that going on here. Thoughts on that? Do you think that they've succeeded so far in separating the parental to children connection here? Shannon?
I would say it depends on, well, you look at what they did to the family in general. You know, they got rid of the dad in a lot of places. So, I mean, they're succeeding, but a lot of it has to do with us as individuals because we have the power. If we don't let them take that bond between our child, then they can't do it. I have a great bond with my daughters. They're not, I know they trust me more than they trust some government entity. I hope that that's the norm.
It's not though, dude.
And number one and number two relate to each other because Shannon brought up Common Core recently. And another dynamic of Common Core is that you're separating, you're removing the authority from parents, right? So like me and you, the way that we learn math, if you try to teach your kid that today, you'd be talking two different languages and they'd be failing their classes. Even if they get the right answer using the techniques that we know, they'd have to use the Common Core technique to arrive at the answer in their own way. And while there's some kind of, you know, justification for trying to get like a standardized way of teaching everybody, this also very directly destroys your authority. Cause like, even like, you know, your kid goes up to you, your theoretical kid, Ryan, comes up to you and he's like, help me do this math homework. And then you don't have the right answer. You have no authority. So now it's like, the teacher has all the right answers. Mom and dad, they can't help me. They don't have the right answers. Everything they tell me is wrong. and the Common Core helps institute that, but then so many other aspects of, you know, public education. I mean, there's plenty of examples where, you know, parents or teachers like illegally, but they'll record and they'll get the teachers in the classroom saying like, oh, your parents don't know anything, listen to me, and, you know, do these things and hide these other things from them at home. So if Shannon said, if you don't have a really close bond with your kids already, the teachers are ready to just snatch them out, you know, away from you and teach them like they were their own kids almost.
Dude, that's a good point. Cause like my dad, who I respect the hell out of, and I did as a kid, even though I was kind of like a rebellious kid. When he admitted to me very early on, he didn't know anything about math. So I needed to pay attention to math in high school, especially because he didn't know it. And I thought that it was dumb of him. You know what I mean? And I love my dad. I always have, man. I have a great relationship with him. And I was like, how the fuck don't you know math? You're this old. And you know, I thought that my dad knew everything. And then once I start realizing he's just a man, you know what I mean? He doesn't know all this stuff. I subconsciously might've lost a little bit of respect for him because of something so dumb as that, you know? Yeah.
You don't imagine how frustrated you'd be that if you really did know math and you knew all the answers, but you just didn't know this like special new magical way of like showing your work. Yep. It would be like, I can help you, but I'm not allowed to help you because the state has these standards that say that my information I'm trying to bestow onto my offspring is not the state, you know, regulated version of it. So that it gets into this really fucking weird, like
Kafka-esque. And that's in a lot of states too. I don't know was it like 47 or 45 states or something? It's Common Core still taught.
I think it rose in popularity and then fell a little bit. So some states are kind of like they can decide if they opt in or out. But
yeah, we don't teach it here.
It's the closest thing to a national standard that the states have right now, though.
Yeah, dude. Okay, so number three, we went through one and two there. I'd say that they're doing a pretty damn good job of getting those first two done. Number three is destroy the Judeo-Christian family structure or the traditional Christian family structure. Now, seems like that's kind of a repeat of that, but it's definitely a different thing. And what Alice Bailey says here is it's oppressive, and that the family is the core of the nation. If you break the family, you break the nation. Liberate the people from the confines of this structure. And why they want to break the family and all this, even though they know that it's the key of the nation and like basically the foundation, like they say, is because they don't want nations. They want one world government, and specifically with theosophy, one world religion, all tying back to the, like what I think is kind of portrayed as the Antichrist here. Shannon, thoughts?
I'm with you, man. It's the same kind of stuff. I would change this document. If you look, it came from some law. I believe it was like a Christian college. I would say we could change that to would mean the nuclear family, which is what they're doing.
Yeah,
you know, it goes back to the welfare, kicking dads out of the house, everything else. So women always win in court.
There's another,
those type of ideas.
There's another argument too that I tend to give more credit to than a lot of other people, but that the integration of women into the workforce had a liberating effect, but it also had you know, fathers and mothers competing against each other.
Absolutely.
In the workforce, driving wages down, and then also establishing this new dynamic of now your kids are going to be babysat by the state, whether it's the public education or whether it's just going to be some, you know, your maid or whatever else it's going to be. In this version of it, it's essentially, if you take this to its logical conclusion, it's the village, right? You have a kid, you give them up to the village, and now like, you don't have any ties to them. You just, everyone's raising everybody, which is crazy to me, but that's kind of like this end goal of the New World Order.
Well, this is very Rules for Radicals-esque, right? It's Saul Alinsky right here to a T. I mean, it takes a village to raise a child, like you said.
Yeah, it's like police state, man, 101.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the police state, I think, is coming, man, unfortunately, with the more division with the right and the left and the polarization. They want a police state because what happens when the right and the left cannot get along in public, like grown ass adults, martial law is ushered in because people are fighting all the time. It's a step in that direction. So yeah, dude, well said, both you guys. Number four here, if sex is free, then make abortion legal and make it easy.
Oh,
I know this one's gonna,
here's some spicy.
Yeah, this one's a very current one. Now, Alice Bailey says build clinics for abortion, health clinics in schools, if people are going to enjoy the joy of sexual relationships, they need to be free of unnecessary fears. In other words, they should not be hampered with unwanted pregnancies. Shannon, thoughts?
I don't know, man. I'll be honest. This one, man, I have no idea.
Gotcha. Okay.
I'll be honest.
Okay. Fair enough.
I've got a hot take on this one.
Ooh, let's hear it.
Yeah. So, man, this is going to sound like the worst pre-qualifier ever, but the pre-qualifier here is that eugenics is an absolutely horrendous and class-based system of eradicating entire peoples and cultures for the most nefarious reasons.
Yep.
Dressed up as some kind of like an advancement or, you know, alleviating burdens on society and families. And it's all bullshit. And I think the entire eugenics movement is probably one of the most evil. Like, if you wanted to say like what's satanic, the eugenics movement to me is probably the most version of a satanic movement that there could be. That qualifier out of the way, my hot take is that I fully believe in choice and having even state-funded free abortions, but I almost feel like there should be like a Subway's rewards card version of it, that like once you make that third punch, like you're getting sterilized. Like if you've had to rely on the state to give you an abortion three times, because I don't think that it should be reliant on if you can afford it or not. That's a little bit fucked, especially if there's a legitimate reason that you might want it or need it. And my other caveat here is that it absolutely is murdering a living human being after the point of conception. And that's not from like a puritanical Christian standpoint, because again, I endorse it. I endorse that you should be able to go and have the state for free kill that little human inside of you. And you don't even have to go and sit down with someone and like do the whole embarrassing, like, yeah, I want to kill a baby and like do all that shit. Like, you go in, you get your card punched, and on the third one, before they let you out, they're like, before you get out that door, we're gonna have to tie those tubes, or, you know, snip your husband or whatever. Like, once you've been involved with, you know, that many state funded
three's
ones.
Generous, dude. I would say three is very generous. I'm trying to be generous.
I feel like, one, you could legitimately end someone's entire lineage for a fluke or a bad decision, sure. Okay. Or, you know, fair. Indiscretions of youth. Three represents like you're legitimately either don't care about yourself or people around you, or here's where the hot take comes in, right?
You're sticking with those baseball rules, dude. Three strikes and you're out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I feel like it's somewhat appropriate, because it's more than a pattern. Like I said, a lot of the things to me, like, I've got this threshold of coincidence, and it's sure. Like, is it just coincidental that you've needed three state-funded abortions over the course of X years, or is this establishing a pattern and a bigger issue that needs to be addressed at a different level?
Okay. Hey, maybe it's something that we can think about later. You brought something up that we touched on earlier. These are the seven goals of the New World Order, so to speak, that tie right into that. Number two here is eugenics that you referenced. Merge God with nature, eugenics, eradicate male-female distinction, world peace and nuclear disarmament, one world economic financial system, government, religion. Those are the seven things that they're going for, man. So, you know, these things are seeming.
Let me ask, which one of these do you think we're the farthest from manifesting? Some of them feels like they're already here.
I would make
an argument. Well, I'm asking you, which ones do you think are the farthest away that like we haven't got to yet?
Of these seven,
yeah.
One world government seems to be the farthest off, because I think a financial system is coming up pretty quick. We already have a one world economy, essentially.
You could almost say Bitcoin too could be this one world currency.
I don't think it'll be Bitcoin. I think that
it won't be Bitcoin, but it represents a sure. This universal currency that everyone trades in now.
Absolutely. I think on a global scale, male female indistinction, I think, is pretty far off too. I think androgyny as a whole is a ways away, at least two generations. I hope. Definitely within one to two generations, I would say that will be more mainstream. World peace is far off, but as far as merging God and nature, that's a ways off. Eugenics is a ways off. The one that I think they're closest to, will reverse engineer your little your question there, because I think that's easier for me to do. It's not even that easy. I would say the financial system would be, and the economic is the closest. The farthest would probably be either the androgyny or the one world government, man. I think that those are a ways away. What are your thoughts on that?
American. Or Shannon, go.
Oh, okay, Shannon, what are your thoughts? Farthest away and closest.
Man, I would say we're probably almost there. That or there already really is there underneath and we don't even know. That's what I would say. I don't think we're that far off at all. I think maybe we're about 10, 12 years, maybe max.
Okay.
And I agree with you on the financial. I think the money system would be the easiest, quickest one to just fall into a universal. Because already, like if you just take like cryptocurrency as a whole, or the certain point of singularity, and the next step is almost going to be like the machines we control are just like spending money amongst themselves, right? It's almost what we do now. If I go and buy something on PayPal and I use a credit card, like no money has ever exchanged hands. You know, this is a basic concept.
Yeah.
It's just moved numbers around in a bunch of different systems. So the next logical conclusion of that is that humans don't even have to move that fake money around. We just have like an app that just automatically pays your bills for you, or automatically, you know, pays your Netflix subscriptions and stuff at it's a certain so convenient. Point. Well, we're going to be so removed from that, that it's almost like you don't even have to opt in for that. It's just the fact that you have this app on your phone will just automatically like pay for itself using like Ether or Bitcoin or something. Yeah. But like, we're already right there. The farthest one is hard. I almost feel like we're almost equal on a lot of them, because the eradication of like the male, female, that kind of gets into like a very metaphorical interpretive sense, because it's not like you're literally gonna, you know, combine two different sexes into
castrate one everybody
new thing. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I guess that's a possibility, but I think it's more of about bringing down the lines of distinction, but to what ends. And I think that's where it gets into the, you know, like what is the actual line? Is there a litmus test that you can make?
Just the fact that the line is getting blurred, I would say, is a success on their part, a loss for us. But yeah, man, no, it's an interesting question you bring up there. Moving back onto this list, though, number five, make divorce easy and legal, free people from the concept of marriage for life. She obviously went through a divorce that was pretty rough, and she went through a relationship that was no good. Yeah, I think that definitely, especially if there are kids involved, it's pretty rough, right? When kids have to go through a divorce. I'm fortunate I never had to go through one, or see my parents go through one.
You can make a counterpoint too, though, that it would be just as rough for a kid to be forced to live with two people that hate each other.
Absolutely.
You know,
definitely.
It's a rough one. Like, some people are just not made to be good parents, and whether they're together and bad parents or separated and bad parents, it's almost like the same end result.
Well, and it's mind blowing.
Right. To me, yeah. It's just humans, right? It's humans. It's what all about real love, not the garbage that these absolutely, guys are talking about, but real love. If you got that bond, it doesn't matter. You'll be good to go.
Well, it's mind blowing to me that you need to get a license to drive a car, but you don't need a license to have a kid. You know what I mean? And maybe that's a little authoritarian, but there are lives affected by having horrible parents, and who knows how many. Like what
you
that
have to get a license
is
to go fishing in most states.
Yeah, well, that's bullshit.
You know, let alone a fucking car. I mean, just to go in and fish out of a pond and bring it home. I mean, you legitimately have to get a license for that.
Yeah, and you know, I've gone fishing without them, but you know, it is. I think everyone has, right? But it's just it is. It's interesting, and like I said, it sounds authoritarian on the surface, but there is a ripple effect there when a kid is treated poorly by two horrible parents. Is that kid going to go the opposite way of the parents, or is that kid going to perpetuate that, you know, abuse and affect, you know, potentially millions of other lives? Who knows? Six here is make homosexuality an alternative lifestyle. That seems to be synonymous with this whole thing too, with the theosophy and how they operate. I guess she preached that sexual enjoyment is the highest pleasure in humanity, and no one must be denied. And that no one must be denied, and no one must be restricted on how to enjoy themselves. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are on that, but I don't have a problem with homosexuality personally, but I do see it as like there's a legitimate slippery slope argument to be made there. I think that pedophilia will be ushered in at some point, and we started with widely accepting homosexuality, which, again, I grew up in the time where that shit was fine. You know what I mean? I have zero problems with homosexuality. My dad's generation is a little bit iffy. And then our grandparents' generation was like, that is weird. You know what I mean? So now what are our grandchildren, two generations from now, or three even, how are they going to feel about pedophilia? I don't know if that makes sense, but I think that the sexuality opening up more and more is going to open the gates to some things that might not be acceptable today.
I'm curious, is this for sure, like the first part here before it says the note, but where it actually says homosexuality, incest, bestiality, is this from Alice Bailey herself, or is this an interpreted version of what she said?
So it abandons the thing. If you go to these first ones up here, it says she said, right? It's oppressive and they take direct quotes. Now, when you get down to here, I don't know if she directly says people should be allowed in whichever way they want to choose, whether it's homosexuality, incest, bestiality,
well, this one started with, like, this one starts with a very Christian or anti-Christian slant. But it's almost like it's very patent fundamentalist Christians to lump in homosexuality and incest and bestiality and put like all the everything into one. Whereas if you kind of treat it in different categories, like, and the reason why I'm making this delineation here is that she says, as long as two agree. Well, the first one seems like that could be possible. Two people can agree to have a homosexual relationship. But when you get into like bestiality or even incest, there's, unless, you know, you're talking about like stepbrother and stepsister, second removed or something, but there's going to be like a weird family dynamic in there where, not to sound all like woke and everything, but the element of consent, I don't think exists the same way between like a fucking dog or a horse and a person. Although there's videos online that show that,
hey, you know, man, the donkey show.
Yeah, the classic donkey show, dude.
Quick tangent here. There's a movie called Zoo. That is a dramatization of a group of guys that would go out into like the middle of fucking nowhere, America, on like this guy's trip. And they would like let these horses just do them in. And ooh, one of the dudes died of like a punctured
prolapse spleen
or some shit. Yeah, like, oh, dude, he died from it. But it very clearly demonstrates that, you know, that maybe it can be consensual, because like the guys would all kind of like line up and wait for the horse to like pick one, and the would like lead them into okay, anyways, without getting too much of a tangent,
one guy's rubbing some alfalfa shit on his asshole or something. Yeah. He's getting that horse to pick him for some reason, and that horse sees a hole and it's gonna hit it, dude. You know what I mean?
Why do they keep picking Ryan?
They wouldn't pick me, dude. They pick you. I'm not into that shit.
Poor guys.
Man, that's hilarious, dude.
Like, I guess the point I was making is just that it's really odd to always see these things all lumped together, because we could discuss one of them in a completely different context as the other two.
Yeah, I would say
I always thought that's what the plus was for.
The plus is so that they can add on, dude. You know what I mean? And I think that you already do. People say, you know, there's going to be a P added onto that. It's already there. It's under that plus sign. You know what I mean? It just isn't formal yet. To answer your question, hopefully a little bit on like whether this is like a very Christian thing, this paper was submitted at Covenant College, and a quick Google on that brings up the Wikipedia, where it's a private Christian liberal arts college. So, you know, it is obviously a very Christian perspective.
Cause some of this comes to me is like, again, I don't know the original source material, but let's say Alice Bailey wrote something about how homosexuality should be accepted. It seems very patently, stereotypically fundamentalist Christian to rewrite that and then plug in that last of like, and incest and bestiality as to throw shade on the homosexuality part. But I don't know the difference.
Well, Crowley was fine with bestiality, wasn't he?
Oh, I mean, I'm sure, but conflating Crowley and Alice Bailey, I just don't know how accurate it is. I'm not standing up for either of them, but if I find it harder to believe that Alice Bailey had that bestiality flag, I just don't know if she was that strong of a proponent of that.
Hey, man, I understand, dude. If you want to stick up for her, she probably was a freak, dude. She probably would get down in some nasty ways. But it's fine, dude. You know, no, I get it, man. I think
he's real freaky.
You know, she was, dude. She'd do some weird shit. She was like, she had that preacher's daughter mentality because she was stuck with an abusive Episcopalian priest, man. You know, there's some weird shit she would do, I'm sure.
It was the perfect storm for sure. It was the girl that grew up in like the uptight fundamentalist Christian household and then just gets dumped in Southern California with a bunch of new age weirdos. You know that she explored herself quite a bit.
Oh yeah, there were some loads blown on her.
It's always the preacher's daughter, man. Always.
Oh, for sure. And some of the best out there to ever do it. But so seven here, debase art, make it run mad. This is an interesting thing too. I guess Alice Bailey understood that the arts are one of the primary keys to change culture. I would say that's absolutely true. I'm sure that you, Paranoid American, feel that there is some significant influence in art. You are an artist. You have a company that is dedicated to this. And you use yours as a fun way to take information that you probably believe to be true, which I would agree with a lot of the stuff, you know, these different theories, some of them being very fringe and some of them being provable with government documents, talking MK Ultra versus like the Starfort stuff and like these, you know, teleportation type things. You use it for fun, but some people could absolutely use art as a dark way to, you know, move culture in one way or the other. I see it as this is absolutely true. If you take art and if you make it not as pure as it used to be, which, yeah, there's always been some sort of more decadent art, I guess, right? But this is I see this to be definitely a key aspect in changing culture. Shannon, do you see any kind of merit to this, you know, debasing art and making the world kind of crazy?
Well, I grew up in Chicago, man, and there's some great architecture back there from a while ago, what the houses used to look like and everything. Now you look at the buildings they build now, they're nothing nice to look at. They're just cold looking. Everything used to be real warm. It's not that way anymore. Even the colors. I'm sure that Paranoid American, you know, just the color stuff they use a lot of times. They use a lot of stuff to make you feel depressed and not so good.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of talking about like brutalism and brutalist architecture, which basically says like, take the most efficient, blocky, you know, forms and just put them together to cram as much people in them as possible without any real regard to like the aesthetics of it.
Right. To make the way you feel.
Make you feel. I mean, it's really great for like Soviet Russia, like Soviet block apartments, assembly factories, to just get you into that like mechanical machine, everything fits into a box mentality. Brutalist architecture is one of those. And another thing here that corrupt and defile here seem like really loaded words, because when you think corrupt defile, it's like, oh, you're gonna, you know, make a nasty devil mustache on a nice painting of the Mona Lisa, or you're gonna like take a big shit on, you know, the Last Supper or something. But corrupt and defile could also mean taking someone's art that meant something and was steeped in symbolism and then changing it, or like knocking off one symbol, or, you know, changing one symbol into another thing to have it lose its original meaning. Because I'm also a pretty big proponent of that artwork can contain all sorts of formulas and information and symbols. And if you came in and distorted those or corrupted and defiled those symbols, you're also destroying part of that artwork. But I don't think that just like ugly art and artwork that, you know, doesn't have like
pretty crazy stuff, huh? If you want to listen to the rest of the Lucius Trust and Alice Bailey rabbit hole that we dig ourselves into, you know what to do. Patreon.com/Dangerous World Podcast, man. I feel like a broken record. But on top of an additional hour of this rabbit hole topic that we find ourselves in, we get a little extra deep in a completely different thing, man. So this is kind of like a bonus on top of a bonus. Head over there. Support the show. Thanks so much, guys. I hope to see you there. But until next time.